go.
Okay. Tonight is the wonderful world of insurance. Insurance is a product that will touch all of your lives, whether you want it to or not. It's a really old concept. Who do you think wrote the first laws on insurance? Anybody? How about a guess? Yeah. Who wrote the first laws on almost everything that we've talked about in the past?
Romans.
Exactly! I knew you were going to say that. Romans! But the concept of insurance actually was before even them. We'll talk about that tonight. It's an exciting area. I can tell you're excited. Kind of hold yourself back. I know that it's tough. Insurance is actually a very interesting area. Matter of fact, in my professional life, I happen to be counsel to the insurance committee, so it's something I really kind of enjoy. I know I need to get out more, right? Okay. Last week, we had the joy of talking about LLCs. Limited liability companies. Just rolls off your tongue, doesn't it? LLC. I feel like I'm singing the alphabet. Anyway, remember LLCs? They're kind of like you take a corporation and a partnership and you marry them. It's the mule version of a corporation. Okay? You get the flexibility of a partnership, but the liability protection,
right, Richard?
Of a corporation. Remember, they're designed for small businesses. We talked last week about their history. Remember, their history is really short. Only 1994. Not a lot of history there, is there? But in their brief time frame, they've made a good impact. A lot of small businesses like them, think they're wonderful, have arranged themselves for them. Formed in a very similar manner that you make a corporation, but a little easier, right? And we talked about its management. Remember, they don't have a board of directors. They don't have a whole management structure like that. They have members. It's a little bit more loose. It's kind of like the partnership. Okay? But the limited liability protection. Okay. Tonight, as I say, we're going to talk insurance. That's going to be a very long class because I know you want to run out of here. But we're going to tell you everything you need to know about insurance and answer any questions you might have. Anyone who wants to own a house, you need insurance. You're going to need it. Anyone who drives a car, you need insurance. Matter of fact, it's the law. You can't drive a car in New York State without one. You need insurance. I know this firsthand. My 16-year-old just started driving to stay off the roads. I had to pay $2,400 to my friendly insurance agent for her privilege to drive. When I told her this fact, it kind of flew over her head like an airplane. Thanks, Dad, I think. Insurance, however, protects you and protects those around you. It's a wonderful idea. We're going to talk about what insurance is. We're going to tell you a little bit about where it came from. I'm a big believer in telling you that because it helps you understand. We're going to talk about insurable interests. Now, what's your name?
Chris.
Chris, you're a nice young man. You're sitting right up front. Basically. I get to pick on you, I'm sorry. Can I buy a life insurance policy on you?
I'm sure.
No. Who's going to say that? You just wish I could, right? Why can't I do that?
No relation.
That's correct. It's a relationship issue. You have to have what is known as an insurable interest. As a public policy, we don't want people having an interest in the death of somebody that they don't care about. Why? Yeah, you don't want to see them die, so you benefit. Not a good idea, is it? You're laughing too hard. You don't want to turn around and take out, have people taking out life insurance policies on people that they don't know. Not a good idea, is it? Okay. So society's come up with this concept known as insurable interest. Pardon me. You have to take out a policy on someone who's a relative because you don't want them to die. And if they do, you suffer a loss. The insurance helps spread that risk of loss and helps compensate you for that loss. If I pass away, my wife and my family will be diminished, albeit from my earning capacity, maybe even from my love and affection. Insurance will turn around and compensate them for that. So my daughters can continue to go to college. So my wife can pay off the mortgage. Hopefully they don't want me to die, but I do sleep with one eye open. I must admit, my wife is into serial killer shows. She watches these things with great glee and then looks at me. We have a big gully next to our house. It's like a big ditch where the storm waters flow through it. She looks at me and says, "You'll fit in there." I know it. But despite that fact, she does have a life insurance policy on me and hasn't cashed it in yet. Okay? Insurable interest. If I have, and I'll talk to this more extensively in a minute, but if I have a partner in a business, I can insure that partner. Why? Because if he dies, my business will be diminished. But Chris, as much as I love you, as much as I consider you a friend, and even my student and my child, because I love you all, okay? I can't take out a life insurance policy on it, nor should I. Okay? With all insurance, in order to buy it for someone, it's a contractual relationship, you have to have an interest. We're going to talk about the types of insurance that there are, and we're going to talk about the magic term underwriting. Underwriting is how you assess that risk and put a dollar amount on it. That's how insurance works. You measure the risk versus the loss. And underwriting is the procedure by which you follow that. Kind of an interesting word. I like underwriting. Okay. What is insurance? I have to take a sip. Excuse me. I'm a very bad asthmatic. This time of the year is fun for me. Okay. Insurance is a contract. Contract between the policyholder, the person who's buying the insurance, and the insurance company. It's a contract, it's an agreement, whereby the insured, that's the person buying the contract, or the person for whom the contract is purchased, because in certain instances you can insure for the other's benefit. They're called a beneficiary. That risk of whatever is happening, what you're insuring against, is transferred from that person over to the insurance company in return for money. Insurance is all about one thing: spreading the risk of loss. If I get into a car accident and my car gets totaled, I'm out the cost of my car if I don't have insurance. I got to pay to get a new car, right? hold it up, put it into an accordion. I got to pay for the cost of that car. That cost me, depending on what kind of car you drive, $30,000 maybe. Okay? What I can do instead is get into a group of thousands of other people and say, guess what? We're going to pay you a certain amount of money every month, and if any one of us gets into an accident, the rest of us is going to pay for it. You look at the overall risk. Out of that thousand, only a few dozen will get in accidents. So even though we pay an amount of money that we won't get back, because it's a policy, you turn around and pay for that risk. If you do get in an accident, you get the big payoff. So the risk is shared amongst everybody. And that little old lady who never has an accident is going to be paying policy dollars forever, but not getting any much of a benefit other than the security. If she does get into an accident, she'll be fine. Other people, when I was a younger man, my nickname was Crash. I had gotten into a few automobile accidents. Guess what? I got the benefit. Of course, back then I was driving beat-up old cars. So, sure, of course. But what it does is spread this risk of loss. That's the whole nature of insurance. You get into a group with a whole bunch of other people and manage your risk. Okay? It's a pooling. So any one individual, their risk is little. Okay. Where'd the first idea for insurance come out of? This gets into the history. We go back to Hammurabi. Anybody ever hear of Hammurabi's code? Who said yes? Tell me what it is. What's one of the most famous concepts of Hammurabi? That's very good. Eye for an eye. Yeah. Hammurabi was a Babylonian king who turned around and said, we have to have a code to administer justice. If you turn around and do something, you should have something done for you or to you. And out of his code came a concept of insurance. The Babylonians were merchants, in addition to doing a lot of other things, including Babylon, where the word comes from, right? That Babylon is Babylon. My wife tells me that. Babylonia, where Hammurabi came from, were merchants. They did a lot of trading, and they did it on the backs of camels. They load up this camel full of stuff, turn around, walk it across the desert. Well, guess what happens when you walk a camel across the desert? Sometimes it doesn't make it to the other side. Sometimes the camel gets sick. Sometimes it gets robbed. Sometimes a horrible storm comes by and something happens to the stuff. It gets ruined. That was happening a lot. So what happened? Hammurabi said, we need to get all these merchants together. And basically they formed a collective to ensure their risks of loss. And he started this concept. It insured property loss. The concept of human loss had not existed yet. Okay? Come along the Romans. Hammurabi was pretty informal. The Romans, remember, they were some kind of people. I'm not a Roman heritage. I'm Irish. We were loosey-goosey. Not formalized like these guys. And the Romans came around as part of their commercial law and said, we have a lot of commerce going on. Because remember, the Roman Empire was largely commercial. As long as you accepted our law, and accepted our trade, you could do anything you wanted under Roman law. Okay? One of the concepts, because they had so many merchants, they had a huge navy, they turned around and said, we have a lot of losses. Because what happens in the Mediterranean? You have bad weather sometimes, and the naval ship will go down, and the commerce ship will go down, and all the stuff on it will go down. So they decided to turn around and do the same thing Grand Robbie did and ensure the risk of loss. They also came up with the concept of life insurance, where they turned around, if somebody died young and had a business, they turned around and reimbursed them. Okay? That was the first concept. The first insurance company really wasn't even an insurance company. Anybody ever hear of Lloyd's of London? Ever hear of it? Lloyd's of London began in... Where do you think Lloyd's of London began? London! Very good. Lloyd's of London was a London group of merchants. I would suspect probably one was named Lloyd. I don't know that for certain. Good guess? Yeah, okay. Lloyd's of London were a group of British merchants who got together and said, we have shipping all over the world. Britain ruled the world at one time because of its navy and because of its merchant fleet. The sun never set on the British Empire. And it was a commercial interest. Well, because of the commerce and level they had a lot of losses too. So how could they manage those losses and spread them out? They started what is known as a gaming house. Traditional insurance just spreads the risk of loss amongst a lot of people. Lloyd's did it a little bit differently. They took bets. They said, give it to Alex. Alex, you've got a hell of a boat. It's really fast, but it's prone to tipping over a little bit. Okay? So you can generally outrun the storms. And you get your stuff there on time, but if you hit a storm, you're in kind of deep doo-doo. Okay? John, you're asked whether or not Alex's boat is a good risk. You're asked to put odds on it. What are the odds that he makes with his boat to Australia? Okay, you put an odd on it, and you'll bet whether or not he does it. And they collect all these bets, so if your ship goes down, you get some money. If it makes it, they cost some money, and you pay a little bit. Okay, not the traditional insurance model that we have today. It was more like a lottery. Okay. Along comes a big bad fire in London. Half of London burns to the ground. People realize that this betting thing, when you've lost your house, doesn't work so well. What they want to do is have fire insurance. So a group of organizations, not-for-profits we would call them today, formed together to spread that risk of loss. This becomes even bigger in the colonies because of one of our great forefathers, Ben Franklin. He started the first firehouse in America. Hired a whole bunch of fire engines. Back then they were drawn by horses. But you know why he started that fire company? He wasn't a fool. He didn't do it just for altruism, although he was an altruistic guy. Why do you think he did it? He also started the first insurance company, and he wanted to protect his losses. Yeah, Franklin, his mama didn't raise no fool. He started the first fire insurance company in the United States. The first insurance company was out of South Carolina. South Carolina, Charleston, had a huge port. Similar to Lloyd's of London, they started to do that. But in addition to starting fire companies, in order to manage his risk, because that's what insurance does, Franklin also said, if you have a house made of wood, I'm not going to insure you. Why? Because wooden houses burn down quicker than brick ones do, right? So he said, I'm only going to insure you if you have a house that's made of brick. And if you walk the streets of old Philadelphia, you're going to see a bunch of plaques on the house. You know what those were? Ben Franklin gave everybody he insured a plaque to put on their house so that if their house caught on fire, the fire company that he also owned would know to put it out. Guess what happens if you didn't have a plaque on your house? Bye-bye. Too bad, right? He only had his fire company for the houses he insured. Okay? Okay. One of the phrases he used to sell insurance was in his old Poor Richard's Almanac was an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. He used that to market his insurance. Today, insurance is widespread. And it is the second highest regulated entity around. There's only one field which is more regulated by the state than insurance. Anybody know what that is? Where do you want to make sure that everybody that's doing everything is doing it right? Sure. Who don't you want to make a mistake with? Exactly. Healthcare. Healthcare is more hyper-regulated than even insurance. And when you bring the two together, whoa, baby, lots of regulations going on there. Big time. I have to think of Madison when James Madison said that any law that was too complicated to be put down in two pages shouldn't be a law. But anyway, that's that thing. Insurance regulation is 99% state law. The state of New York is the one that regulates all your insurance. It's not done by federal law. There is one exception. It's called the McCarran-Ferguson Act. It was passed, I believe, in 1945, that says all insurance will be regulated by state law. Okay? That's the one area the federal government has yet to eat the state's lunch in. Insurance is not an area that they're involved. Now, the new health care legislation that passed a couple years ago might prove an exception if it ever survives the Supreme Court. We'll see. But most regulation of insurance is state, even today. Okay? It's a huge industry. New York State alone, $4 trillion. Let's put that in perspective. That is almost one-third of America's GDP. That's a huge amount. Why? Because they have a lot of money coming into it to spread that risk of loss. New York State alone, almost a quarter million people are employed by insurance companies or their affiliates. Okay? 2 million people nationwide. As we age and as we get more sophisticated, guess what? That'll probably even grow. Okay. As we said, an insurance is a contractual relationship. The contract of insurance is called a policy. And if you are a person who buys that policy, what do you call? Who said that? Good job! You're a policy holder. That's who you are. You're a person who holds the policy. You're the one who gets the contract. As we said, in order to purchase that policy, you have to have an insurable interest. When we talk about life insurance, that means that person must be a relative, or that person must have some kind of financial relationship with you. When you're talking about property, you must own it. I can't buy a homeowner's insurance policy on your house. I can't buy an automobile insurance policy on your car. I have to own that. Because okay? I'm the one who has to suffer the loss. Okay? Now, I can... Excuse me, I'm sorry. I can buy a policy for someone who has an interest with me. So like my daughter, who's a family member, I can pay for her automobile insurance and buy that on her behalf. Okay? I can buy a life insurance policy on my wife. I don't have one. But I could. She has one. Three parts of the insurance contract. First, you have an application. They have to look to make sure you have an insurable interest and the ability to pay it off, the contract, okay? You have to, as we said, insurance is very highly regulated. The terms of that policy are not only determined in contract, but they're also determined by the Department of Financial Services. Used to be known as the Insurance Department. We'll get to that in a minute. They're the state entity that oversees it. So it's not just like you and I can write a contract for insurance. It's got to follow those statutory and regulatory guidelines. And lastly, that contract has duties between the parties. The insurer, the person who I buy the insurance from, has to provide me with the money in the event a loss happens. But they have to do other things too. They have to keep reserves on hand, a bank account of money basically, that the insurance department, the Department of Financial Services, tells them to, so that they'll be solvent to pay those risks. To give you an example, I know many of you might not remember this because it happened right around the time many of you were born. It was a great hurricane. Hurricane Andrew. It wiped out Florida. It had huge catastrophic losses everywhere. It was even worse than Katrina, which you may remember. Thousands, literally thousands of insurance companies went bankrupt because they couldn't pay all the losses. Indeed, the state of Florida had to take ownership of a lot of the companies to pay off the claims because of the losses. So when insurance gets regulated, one of the things they look at is you have the reserves in case these horrible things happen. Because of that experience, there was a lot of changes made in insurance regulations, so when Katrina happened, there wasn't the level of insolvencies and more of the insurance policies got paid on. Not all of them. There's still some insolvencies, but a lot of them got paid because of that experience. Okay. How do you get an insurance contract? Well, I can call up My insurance broker for automobile and homeowners is called Amica. They are a direct writer policy. I don't have an insurance agent or a broker. I call up Amica, they sell me the policy. I give them the check. But that's unusual. Most insurance is sold through agents. And what your agent is called depends on who employs them. It can be an insurance agent or an insurance broker. If that agent, and they're both agents, an insurance agent works for the company that you're buying the insurance from. So if it's Allstate, they're good hands people, okay? Those agents work for Allstate. An insurance broker is someone the prospective policyholder hires. They're your agent. They don't work for an insurance company. Okay? Most policies of insurance are purchased through agents, either an agent or a broker. Okay? They have to be licensed by New York State. Those people have to take a test and have to be certified. Okay. When the regulations on insurance are silent, the contract provisions are what control. But the regulations are seldom silent, at least in New York. New York's Department of Financial Services is the gold standard for insurance regulation. We have the most sophisticated and active insurance department in the nation. Every other state tries to be New York. One of the reasons for that is we have a huge financial services industry in New York. More insurance companies are located in New York than any other state in the country. New York City is the financial capital of the world. And as we said, $4 trillion worth of business a year, 200,000 employees, most of that in New York City. Under these regulations and the statutes, things like lapses. You didn't pay your insurance policy and it went dormant. Okay? You can redeem that under law. Cancellation. Let's say, any of you from Long Island? Raise your hand if you are. Who here lives near the shore? Anybody? Where do you live? That's where my wife's from. Are you on the shore? Or?
It's right near the ferry.
Okay. Yeah. Take the ferry frequently. Okay. Port Jefferson is a beautiful, picturesque city, village, right? In Suffolk County, with a lot of homes that are on the water. They're on the Long Island Sound, particularly near that golf course. Okay. I'm surprised I know. Being the upstate of it. But those homes that are on the water are a special damage for winds from hurricanes and water. Look what happened at Hurricane Katrina. As a result, a lot of insurance companies don't want to insure homes there. Hard to get insurance there because their risks are really high. Particularly on expensive homes. They're trying to do things known as windstorm exclusion. Say, we'll insure you in case somebody slips on your front stairs, because the fact you're on a beach doesn't matter whether or not somebody's going to slip on your front stairs, but we're not going to insure you in case a hurricane comes through. That's called a windstorm exclusion. The problem is, the insurance department doesn't like that. They think everybody should be treated equally. Whether they're right or they're wrong depends on your point of view. But at the end of the day, that's what it is. But certainly a person who's on the ocean has a greater risk from a windstorm than somebody who lives in the center of Columbia County. Okay? As a result, the insurance department says, insurance agent, you have to write this policy that covers the windstorm. And, excuse me, you can only cancel 2% of your policies in any year. Can't cancel more than that. Why? Because they'd write it with the windstorm, but then it cancel everybody who lives on the ocean, right? So in order to prevent that, they regulate it. As we say, very highly regulated. Okay? An insurer that doesn't settle claims can be hit with a bad faith lawsuit. This happened this year with Hurricane Irene and Tropical Storm Lee in central New York. There was quite a bit of flooding. Schoharie County got wiped out almost. There was one village that lost 124 homes. Just washed away. Right down the street. Pretty bad. Allstate, good hands people, administered the federal flood insurance for all those homes that actually purchased it. It's a federal program. The insurance is written by the federal government, but administered through these different companies. What happens if Allstate doesn't pay the claims that they should? They could be sued. And if they did it in bad faith, they can be sued for treble damages and attorney's fees. It's a pretty high threshold, pretty high hit. Okay. What kind of insurance is there out there? Lots of different kinds. But think of it in three different areas. I'm awful sorry, excuse me. First, you have property and casualty insurance. That's automobile insurance, maritime insurance, homeowners insurance, fire insurance, and personal liability. Then you have a segment known as commercial liability insurance. Some overlap there. Professional liability. If I'm a doctor, that's my malpractice insurance. We talked earlier about directors and officers. When you're a corporate head, your shareholders can sue you if you do stupid things, right? You could buy insurance for that. That's director and officers. Construction insurance. If I turn around and decide to build an enormous office complex, I buy insurance in case somebody slips on the work site, in case one of my cranes falls down. I can also buy what is known as a surety bond, because the people who are taking over that building want it on September 1. What if my crews, because of bad weather, can't have the office building completed before September 1? Well, you, as the company who contracted with me to build it, are going to have to go out and buy new office space in that pendency. You're going to suffer a financial loss, right? You can make me buy a bond, a surety bond, an insurance policy that covers that risk. Okay? So if I don't complete my project as promised, either on time or deliver you what you want, you could buy insurance to cover that. Lastly, we have health and life insurance. They're interrelated. Health insurance, life insurance, and disability insurance. Boy, I'm awful sorry. Okay. Automobile insurance. That's what probably touches most of your lives directly. Automobile insurance in New York State is compulsory. You own a car, you have to insure it. You're required. If you are driving a car without insurance, it is not only not insured, it's a misdemeanor. You've committed a crime. Okay? And they will prosecute you. It is not a good thing to drive around without insurance. That being said, not every state is compulsory. So let's say I'm coming from a state that doesn't require me to have insurance. And let's say I get into an automobile accident with you. I'm sorry. Under New York State law, we have no-fault insurance. That means you don't look to who is at fault. That means your insurance company pays you, the driver, as long as there's not $50,000 worth of personal economic loss. Okay? Now, what about your car, though? Your car isn't covered under no fault. You are. Your medical costs are. But your car isn't. I'm driving around from Timbuktu and hit you. And I don't have insurance. How do you get paid? Huh? Yeah, but let's say I have no money. Okay? I'm not going to pay my insurance. Okay? So I don't have any money. So, yes, you can sue me and you'll get a judgment, but I'm a deadbeat and have no money. Can you get paid? What do you think?
Yes. Doesn't New York have a cap law that will at least cover your cop in the
New York City. It's called the underinsured or uninsured motorist fund. There is a fund under state law. What's your name?
Steve.
Steve, E+. Part of your insurance policy is a tax. When you pay it, and it goes into this fund. The underinsured or uninsured, let's say I had a real low policy when I hit you. Okay, it paid you $50. Didn't help you much. Okay? You can go into this fund and you can get a recovery. It is limited. Probably won't cover it $50,000 in its AIDS. Okay? But it may cover my own Toyota. Okay? If you have one. Okay. Now, two parts of your automobile insurance. You have what is known as comprehensive policy that handles the property damage that happens or collision. Okay? What that handles is the property damage to your or somebody else's car. Then you have the liability policy that handles the issue with respect to personal injuries. Okay? No fault in New York. Other states, you're required to prove fault. So in order to get a recovery in other states, I have to sue you in order to get covered. Okay? Anybody drive a motorcycle? You have no fault. No, you don't. Under New York State law, my buddy, motorcycles are exempted from no-fault insurance. You have liability insurance, which means if somebody hits you, I don't see you, okay? And I hit you and knock you off your motorcycle, guess what? You can sue me for your personal injuries. Okay? You can't do that if you were driving a car. Because if you were driving a car, your own insurance would cover it. Motorcycles are an exception to the New York State no-fault law. You know why? You drive a motorcycle. I figure you're all expert on all things.
So
something.
The reason why is, and I'm sorry, but motorcycles are viewed as inherently dangerous. So insurance companies didn't want to give them that no-fault protection. As a result of that, you have to go out and prove that. When I was a young lawyer, one of the first cases I had was a young man who got hit by a truck with a motorcycle. Now, you could tell that only a young man could probably survive that. If I got hit by a truck with a motorcycle, there'd be nothing left. Okay? He, on the other hand, just kind of cartwheeled along and broke his helmet. Ouch. But he sued the truck, who ran a red light, and he won. He got a recovery. But he got to sue him. Had he been in a car, his own insurance company would have paid for his physical injuries. Okay? Now, with respect to your car, you can sue the other party for the physical damage to the property, because no fault does not apply to property damage. Only applies to personal physical damage. Okay? What happens if your car catches on fire? My mother-in-law, who lives in Port Jefferson, one day came out, started her car, rather old model car, but I think it only had like 30 miles on it, because she just drove it back and forth to the grocery store. But she turned the key one day and it's caught on fire. Burned right down to whatever cars burned down to. How, nobody hit her, right? How did that get paid for? Under your insurance policy, you have something called comprehensive coverage for property value. And that includes, if your car catches on fire, my mom parked too close to a tree once. Up in the Great Lakes where she parked her car, they have an occasional straight line wind storm. And the wind came across Lake Ontario, picked up the tree, and right on top of the car. No more car. Big pancake. The insurance covered that under the comprehensive section of the policy. That gets covered there. Part of your insurance policy. Now, automobile insurance is experience rated. That means your cost that you pay is based upon the number of accidents you have. Remember, insurance is spreading the risk of loss. So they look at actuarially how likely you are to have an accident. If your nickname is Crash, and you get into an accident regularly, you're going to be paying hoo-hoo bucks in insurance. If you're like my mother-in-law, drive 3 miles back and forth to the grocery store and never scratch anything on the car, your insurance rates are going to be relatively low. Now, even if you've never had an accident and are a young gentleman below the age of 26 and single, actuarially, you're likely to get into an accident. So your insurance rates are far higher than, say, myself, who's an old guy. Okay? Why? Because they look actuarially and say most of the accidents are by young men who are under 26. So by falling into that category, you are going to end up paying more for insurance. I'll also tell you something else which you probably didn't know about insurance. One of the things they look at is your credit report. If you have bad credit, your insurance rates are dramatically higher. Because actuarially, insurance companies believe, well, they're not true at all, but they believe if you have bad credit, guess what? You're more likely to get in an accident. I guess they figure if you don't want to take care of your credit, you won't want to take care of your car, or you don't really care so much about it. I don't know. But at the end of the day, it's just the case. It's one of the factors, actuarially, that the insurance department allows automobile insurers to take into consideration. Okay? Okay. Marine insurance. Remember, marine casualties, when a ship goes down, was one of the first areas that spawned insurance in the first place. It's a very big industry. The United States is still one of the biggest shippers on the planet. We have huge ports that are very busy. And although we don't have a single flagship left, the Merchant Marine does not operate out of the United States lines anymore. Most ships are flagged under Panama or Libya or some other goofy place. Okay? We still underwrite the vast majority of insurance, even if it's for a foreign flagship. Okay? Now, marine insurance has a very special aspect. Ships are governed under something known as admiralty law. There is a very goofy jurisdictional issue with admiralty. If you and I get into a dispute, I can sue you, right? What's your name?
Steve.
Steve? So if you don't like what something I've done, or if I've done you wrong or something, I get you your car and mine, you can sue me, right? But in the maritime world, I can sue the ship. The ship is viewed as a person for jurisdictional purposes under the law. So I kind of like a corporation. So if I have an issue with your ship and it comes into play with insurance, I don't have to sue the owner of the ship. And that can be very problematic, particularly if it's flagged in Liberia. Okay, I can't find the owner, don't even know who it is, it's registered someplace in a place you couldn't even find. I can just sue the ship. And I can serve the ship by going up to the ship's captain and serving him. So under admiralty law, you have what is known as in rem jurisdiction, and I can actually sue the ship to recover. That becomes important in marine insurance. Okay. Homeowners and fire insurance. Fire insurance, for a loss to be covered, there must be an actual hostile fire. What does that mean? That means I can't burn my own building to the ground. It's got to be an act of nature or an accident. Somebody left the stove on. Okay? I can't do it myself. It's got to be an actual fire. You know, lightning strikes the house, burns to the ground. Okay? The insurer is liable for the actual amount of the loss, but there are deductibles in any policy. Frequently in automobile insurance, deductibles $1,000 or $500. So those little losses are not covered under insurance. That way it makes easier to be able to afford the policy, not cover little losses, but cover big losses. And there's deductibles in homeowners and fire, too. One of the problems with fire insurance is your house burns to the ground is an issue of proof. What did you have there in the house? Do you think things like pictures are covered? You have a picture of your little sister that you loved more than anything. Showed how wonderful she was and happy in her youth. And that picture was more valuable to you than anything in the world. But you can't put a real monetary value on it. So even though that picture gets horribly destroyed in the fire, you don't get compensated for it. Okay? It's only for actual loss that you can demonstrate and prove. I'm so sorry. At the end of the day, when your house burns to the ground, everything you had to prove that loss is gone. It's very, very difficult. One of the problems we saw with the recent flooding was just that. When the creek or the river comes up and takes your house and brings it down into a neighboring county, there's nothing left. How do you prove, you know, you had that Louis Vuitton suitcase up in the attic? It was worth, you know, $1,000. How do you prove it? It's hard. And claim it just yet.
In terms of fire, isn't it true that if you have a keg in the house, they won't cover it?
You have a what?
If you had a keg in the house, they won't cover it.
No.
Is that true?
No.
Remember.
But along those lines, question was that, did you guys hear what the question was? Her landlord told her, if you have a keg in a house and it burns to the ground, it won't come. Not true. However, remember, it's got to be an actual hostile loss. So if you turn around and show that you were drunker than a skunk and set the house on fire, is that an actual hostile loss? I think there might be some disclaiming of coverage there. That being said, at the very least, even though you're probably judgment-proof as a young student, as I was once in my life too, I remember when I was at Hofstra Law School, long time ago, we had quill pens. I was so poor that when the people actually got mugged in the parking lot, they ignored me because they knew that I didn't have any money. Man. With respect to fire insurance, it's hard to prove. And if they want to disclaim coverage, they'll look at other things too. Okay? You have a failing business. Bob's Donuts is not doing well. And suddenly on a grease fire, Bob's Donuts burns through the ground. You think they're going to instantly pay that loss? I'll get to you a second. They're going to investigate that to make sure I didn't burn it to the ground. Yes, you had a question. I'm sorry, honey, I got to come up so I can... Most policies do not. Matter of fact, if you decide to run into my car, for example, okay, I'll get you the flood insurance in a minute, and you smash it up and I sustain $15,000 worth of damage, makes my car look pretty ugly. But it still runs. I can still pass an inspection. It's just really beat up and ugly. Can I get the $15,000 from your insurance company? You bet. Do I have to fix my car? Nope. So I can get the money, but I don't have to fix it. Now, flood insurance is very tricky. Your homeowner's policy will not cover flood damage. It's excluded. So if you have a standard homeowner's policy and your house floods away out in the Long Island Sound from beautiful Port Jefferson, will your homeowner's policy pay for it? No, it won't. It'll say, geez, I'm so sad. Really bad news. But you're not covered. It has to have, there's one underwriter, it's the federal government that writes flood insurance. You can buy that additional coverage through usually your own homeowners, but it's an additional charge. They have very strict requirements as to how you get paid, because the federal government actually doesn't pay you. FEMA administers the program, Federal Emergency Management Program. Okay? But it's administered through an insurance company. And how an insurance company makes good on a claim, they send a claim agent out to your house, and you have to prove to that person what your losses were. You negotiate with that claim agent, because if you have this damage, you have to prove to him what the value of the damage is. He'll put one number on it, and his job is pure and simple to save the insurance company money. That's what his job is. Your job as the person who's the policyholder is to get the money you need that you've paid all these policy dollars for. Right? You want to get reimbursed. That's what you paid for. That's why insurance existed. You negotiate with that claim agent, which I'm sure, was it your dad? He did. Now, you can have any agreement you want with that claim agent. He may turn around and say to you, you get it fixed and give me the bill and I'll pay the claim. Okay? Show me how much it is because I can't adjust this. That means he can't figure out how much it was. Okay? And he can make that deal if your father agrees. Your father could turn around and say, firstly, no, I'm going to take you to court. This is how much it is and I don't want to get it fixed. Okay? He's entitled to that policy regardless of whether he fixed it. But it might be easier for your dad just to say, okay, this is what he agreed to pay the claim for. I'll do it and I'll get the money. Okay?
Yeah, it took
3 months. I'm sorry to say that's pretty quick. Okay? That may seem like a long, long time, but I'm telling you, some of these people, sadly, in Schoharie County still haven't gotten paid. Okay? And that flood was in September. Okay. Remember, homeowner's policy is a single contract. Okay? Often provides fire, theft, and liability all in one package. Does not provide flood insurance. I'm sorry, I hope you have it. Do you have it? You don't know? Ask your mom and dad. Tell them they ought to get it for what it's worth. Free advice is worth the price you pay. Okay? I do not have it, so I'm going to. But I don't live in a flood zone, despite the creek on the side of my house. My wife wants to put me. Okay. Personal liability insurance. I have on my insurance policy with my friend Zamika, my automobile, my homeowners, and what is known as an umbrella policy that comes right above it, just like an umbrella comes above your head. That umbrella provides for personal liability. Now, at one point in time, Amika used to give me a hard time on that, because I was an elected official for 18 years, retired last year, which I was a county legislator, not an elected official that anybody ever heard of, but I was still an elected official. And as a result of that, insurance companies don't like to underwrite them, because sometimes people don't like them. Hope I was different, but who knows. At the end of the day, Amika used to call me up and say, what if somebody just sues you because they don't like you? I said, well, there's not much I can do about that. Never happened. But you can get an umbrella policy to cover all other areas of liability in your life. To cover all your negligent acts. doesn't have to relate to your home, doesn't have to relate to your car. Can everybody give me an example of what might be covered under that? Anybody think of something?
Malpractice?
Well, actually, malpractice isn't covered because that's a separate type of policy. Okay, but it's good. Okay.
We had a kid crack his head in their pool.
I'm sorry?
We had a kid crack his head in their pool.
Our
policy.
I assume it's not your policy, not your pool.
Policy.
Was it at your pool?
Yeah.
See, that's covered under your homeowners.
Okay.
What? Let's say you were at, I'll give you an example, okay? Let's say you were at a public pool, okay? And you saw a young kid turning around and jumping in and said, you know, you're going to get hurt, don't do that. And you grab him so that he doesn't jump in, trying to protect him, you're not doing anything malicious or bad. And you slip, and he breaks his leg. Okay? You're trying to save him from breaking his neck, but he slips and breaks your leg, breaks his leg. You're in a public pool. So your homeowners isn't going to cover it. You didn't hit him with a car, so the auto isn't. But if his parents turn around and say, what the heck were you doing? You broke his leg. We're going to sue you. That umbrella policy would cover you for doing it. Wasn't something malicious. You didn't break your leg over your knee or anything. Okay, you didn't do it on purpose. Now, intentional torts. I turn around and burn down your house. I turn around and break back his leg on purpose. Is that covered? No. Okay? It's not covered. Because it's intentional. Insurance covers accidents, mistakes, things of nature. A great tornado wipes out your house. Okay? That's covered. I turn around, throw a hand grenade, it's not covered. Okay? For me, it is covered. For you. Okay? Okay. Professional liability. Who said malpractice? Okay? I'm a lawyer. One of the things I have to carry is professional malpractice insurance. If I must make a mistake in practicing law, I miss a statute of limitations. Pray to God I never do. Okay? Or if I screw up a case somehow professionally, my client can sue me and say, you know, any lawyer worth their salt would have seen that. How could you be so stupid? They can sue me and they have a 6-year statute of limitations. My professional liability policy for malpractice, if they get through the New York State Bar Association, would cover that. Okay. Similarly, I'm a doctor. I turn around, I have to amputate your leg because of cancer, and I cut off the wrong leg. I'm an idiot. You can sue me. And not only get whatever value your leg has, but also the pain and suffering. Economic loss you would suffer as a result of that. Because it's a personal injury. That's why medical malpractice cases are so much bigger than other types of malpractice. If I screw up a legal case, it's not going to be the same impact on your life as if I cut off the wrong leg. Right? So as a result, medical malpractice verdicts tend to be enormous. Other malpractice, not as much. They're big, but not that level. Medical malpractice costs of insurance are correspondingly enormous. Physicians pay hundreds of thousands of dollars a year just for insurance. Depending on your field of practice. Now, if I'm a GP, a general practitioner, my malpractice isn't going to be that high. Okay? Because I don't treat people with the extreme problems. If I give you the wrong cold medicine, it probably won't get better. But if I turn around and I'm a surgeon, I'm a neurosurgeon, I do brain surgery, it's a specialty at the highest level, I can really hurt you. If I'm an obstetrician, someone who delivers babies, that baby can be defective as a result of something I do and hurt, I can be sued for millions and millions of dollars. So their insurance policies are off the charts. This is a real problem. It's a problem in society. Because we want those people who get hurt. Can you imagine how horrendous, Victor, would be if somebody got their wrong leg cut off? I mean, can you think of something? That's why I use it. I mean, it's a horrible example. But think about this, too. As much as you want that person compensated and that doctor punished for being an idiot, every time you pay a medical bill, you're paying for that. Just the insurance policy. So even if your doctor has never done anything wrong, if he's the best doctor, she's the best doctor in the world, she's going to be paying hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical malpractice insurance just to practice.
My uncle is an anesthesiologist.
Oh, gosh, his practice has got to be through the roof, right?
Yeah, and his kids want to be doctors, and he's discouraging them because of the insurance, period. That's the only reason.
Now, that's a real point. Okay? I have a cousin, and I'll personalize this for a second. Who's a physician. He's the best doctor I've ever met in my life. He's awesome. Okay? He's a GP. But he teaches medicine at Albany Med, at Ellis and Skinner. And I will tell you, he pays $35,000 every year in medical malpractice. Every year. And he is one of the lower end ones. And that means he can't hire an intern or a nurse because he's got to pay this every single year. And that's just for him. So if he brings another doctor into the practice who's not as experienced or not as talented as he is, he's going to have to pay $50,000 on them. That comes directly out of every dollar you pay for health care. Now, you got to balance that as a society. The trial lawyers say we should have as much insurance as we can. Get those verdicts up as high as we can because those people need to be covered. The physicians, on the other hand, say this is insane. I don't want my kid to become a physician. Because we're paying hundreds of thousands of dollars if you're an anesthesiologist, nobody wants to be one. What do you do? Well, in Britain, they have one idea which hasn't caught on here. They make the loser pay all the legal fees. What that means is you bring a case that isn't valid, you're going to end up paying for it. We don't do that in the United States. But it knocks down a lot of the litigation. I don't have the answer. I don't know. Maybe somebody here in this room is bright enough to figure it out. I hope you got it. Okay? But it's a problem. It's a problem. And nothing in healthcare is going to bring that down because it's still there. So the question is who's going to pay it and how much it's going to be. Okay. Directors and officers, we discussed that. Construction and surety bonds, discussed that. Life insurance. Life insurance used to be one of the biggest investment vehicles that the average middle-class person would have. You would basically buy a life insurance policy, and it would take care of your mortgage and your spouse after you passed away. Life insurance is the typical insurance policy you buy for your beneficiary. Why is that? That's me. Because you're dead! You don't get any of the money! You're dead! So, it's got to be a beneficiary. But, do you have to name that beneficiary?
No.
No, you don't! What happens if you don't name the beneficiary of your life insurance policy? What happens if you don't have to say who it is? That's correct! Very good. You're hitting on all cylinders here. Perfect. Very fine. Really? Your estate gets it and it passes through your estate. What happens if you don't have a will? Maybe you take Paul Morgan's collect? Trust and estates? If you don't have a will, it goes through your estate, which is the intestacy step, right? That means that your family members, basically closest to you, end up getting it. You want to know exactly who? Talk to Mr. Morgan. He's a really good teacher. Great. Anyway. Life insurance goes to them. You pay a policy. It's based upon, again, experience rated. That means, if I'm an athlete, and my parents live to be 108, and I'm slim, and I'm hardworking, eat nothing but carrots, don't smoke, never took medication or drugs, I'm going to be at a whopping great risk. And my policy is not going to cost much. Particularly if I start buying it when I'm 20 years old. Now, what happens if I'm 50, have a rather pronounced rotundness, smoke 20 packs of cigarettes a day, I'm a severe alcoholic, never met a hamburger I didn't like, and think exercise is something that I watch on television? I'm not a very good risk, am I? And by the way, both my parents died when they were 28 of heart attacks. Okay? My policy is going to be very, very expensive. Because actuarially, they're going to flip out and say, you got to be kidding me, right? Life insurance, too, is experience rated. So as a result of that, you're behavior sets your rates. Also, where you fall into the general population sets your rates. Let's say you're really average. Okay? Your parents live to 74.5, which is the average life expectancy. You come basically in where most people do in weight and fitness. You know, you have a cocktail on a Saturday night, but nothing more than that. Hey, you don't smoke. Where are your actuarial rates? It depends on your age. It depends on where you live. Certain areas have higher life expectancies. Savannah, Georgia has one of the lowest life expectancies. Close to the Carolinas, so be careful. In the United States. Don't know what. Some people suspect it might be because of the atmosphere pressure. I don't know. But I can tell you that people who live there pay far higher insurance rates for life insurance. Because the life expectancy in that city is lower. I don't know why. Okay? Okay. Health insurance. Big conversation these days going on. Health insurance used to be, that means not now, experience rated. But a lot of legislation has come in with respect to small group policies that make it not. I'll explain that in a second. Health insurance is by and large provided by your employer. Not exclusively. What happens? What is, John, what's the largest number of businesses? What entity is most businesses? Sole proprietorship, small business, right? So if you're a small business and only one guy, you got to buy your own health insurance. Your employer's you, right? So you have to purchase this yourself. But if you work for a big mega company like GE, they'll buy it for you. And if GE buys it for you, you can get thrown in with all the other GE employees. I get thrown in with all the other employees of the state of New York, and there's a lot of them. So they don't do the experience rating for that because they have a group. With me, it's 100, several hundred thousand people. With GE, it is too. But what happens, John, when you do it out of your sole proprietorship? You're a group of one, right?
Yeah.
Or let's say you have 50 employees, you're a group of 50. A lot smaller, okay? What happens? Well, New York State, 1993, changed small groups from being experience rated to being what they call community rated. And as a result of that, you're no longer experience rating small group health insurance. That's good in the fact that if you're really a bad risk, you're not going to be paying a lot of money. It's bad if you're a good risk and now paying for all the bad risks. It had the effect of actually increasing the price of small group health insurance for small businesses principally. Since 1993, it has skyrocketed. Is it only because of the experience the rating alone was taken away? I don't know. A lot of other factors. But that's one of the issues out there. So because of state law, remember it's a contract, but it's a contract that has to be approved by the insurance department, Department of Financial Services. Okay? The contract's provisions are changed. And now a small group, which is defined as under 50, cannot be experience rated in New York. Okay? There's been a lot of discussion. Matter of fact, we went to the Supreme Court a few weeks ago with a new Obamacare bill. Because that piece of legislation now says you have to have an insurance policy or you have to pay a tax. So you either turn around, buy an insurance policy, or if you can't afford one, one is given to you. But if you can afford one and choose not to, you have to pay a tax. That was challenged in the United States Supreme Court. Stay tuned, we'll see what they say. Okay. Some legal commentators say it's going bye-bye. Some say, no way. We'll see. Lastly, who likes the duck? Aflac. Ever see the duck? Aflac. The duck sells disability insurance. Aflac is a disability insurance writer. Remember, the duck tells you what happens if you get hurt and can't work or buys your groceries. A disability insurance policy provides you monthly payments based on the policy you choose every month if you get hurt or sick. It's not health insurance. And are disabled as a result. So if you get injured, or if you get sick, then you get a monthly payment based on this disability policy. Okay? Again, it's not health insurance. It turns around and takes over primarily your economic loss. There's a cost to it. You buy it, pay for it every month. It, too, is experience rated. So if you are a lumberjack and work 80 feet up in the air on trees, cutting them down with chainsaws, you're going to be paying far more than myself, who's a lawyer, pushing a pencil around a desk. Two reasons why that is. First, if the guy falls out of a tree, which is far more likely, he's going to do far more damage than me pushing my pencil around. Secondly, it's far harder for me as someone who only pushes the pencil around since behind the desk to actually become disabled to the point where I can't work. If I bang up my knee, I can still go to work and push the pencil around. If he bangs up his knee, he can't, because he can't be up in a tree, right? So his policy is going to be far more expensive than mine. Not just because he has a more hazardous job, but because the nature of his job requires a much more physically strenuous activity. Okay? So it's the nature of the risk as well as the nature of the loss. Insurance is one thing. Spreading the risk of loss. Guess what? What's your name in the San Francisco?
Kevin.
Kevin? Spreading the risk of loss for insurance? Guaranteed on the final, though, buddy. You got that? Insurance spreads the risk of loss. That's what it does. Got it? What's your name?
Dave.
Dave? You good? Okay. Now, got a question for you. What governor of New York was president twice, ran for president three times, and is the only president that has two numbers? And has a city named after. Not in New York. Who said it first? Come on down. Somebody over here said it too. Oh.
Huh?
Oh, yeah. Cleveland, Grover Cleveland. Come on down and I'll see you next week. By the way, before you leave, hold on. Had a couple of you ask me for letters of recommendation. If you did, please come down and see me.